I love having lipstick on my cheek. If I was to try to put it on, it'd be on my cheek. So, my name is Nancy Burkhalter, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon, the worldwide fellowship of Al-Anon. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I do need to say a couple things right off, and that's that it's really unusual for Al-Anons not to find one another. So if you're kind of new or you're not in Al-Anon, don't think that would ever happen again, because we're trackers. We can find you. You know what? If you ever need to find anybody, just get you an unrecovered Al-Anon, and you can find anybody. And I also want to say that Donna didn't try to claim my baggage either. She's working a good program. So that was nice. She did find us in baggage claim, but she wasn't over there trying to claim our luggage. So I really appreciate that. You know, I want to thank you for the miracle of this weekend, because I was so busy living life, I'd have missed it. Maybe you can identify with that. I was so busy appearing to have a great life, I would have missed miracles like this. So for me to say thank you for the honor, the absolute privilege of being a small part of this weekend, there's no words. And I also have to say that my mouth said that long before my heart meant it. Maybe you can identify with that too. I've had awesome sponsorship throughout my experience in recovery. Awesome sponsorship. And I thought I better go ahead and say that before I started claiming ownership to some of the things I'm going to say. And I was told from the get-go, I don't care what they ask you to do. Say yes and then say thank you. And I got to tell you, you can say yes and thank you with clenched teeth. It works. And mine was why? You know, I would have come up with why. Or do you know who you're talking to? But I always said yes, and I said thank you for that opportunity. And today, boy, I tell you, there's nothing like, don't stop. Please, whatever program you're in, don't stop until you get to that place where your heart and your mouth are on the same page, where you realize it is an unbelievable privilege just to be a small part of this experience today and this fellowship. I do want to thank Donna and Dale and all the folks. The committee, good grief. Good grief. I'm glad that there aren't words to express that, but that there are people who are willing to come to the airport and track you down. And I'm spoiled. I have to tell you, I never know who's... I don't ever pay any attention. I just walk off the plane, and there's always somebody who can track you. We just have this radar. And for those things, those kinds of commitments, I'm very grateful. So, as it was said last night, my job's cut out for me. I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I heard a great speaker this summer say, you know, if I'd have known what it was like was going to be so important, I'd have tried to remember better. You know, I'd have put it in my computer, you know, or something to try to remember that, because a lot of mine's hearsay. I hope there are no attorneys in the room, but a lot of, don't stand up and say hearsay, because I know it is. I wasn't there most of the time. I was too busy. And if you truly have an Al-Anon nerve in you anywhere, you understand that. I was so busy. I missed most of life. And a lot of the stuff I can't remember. But I do need to tell you that I stopped doing drive-by Al-Anon in May of 1986. See, I kind of drive through. And boy, those rooms. You know, any meeting, I had started a 12-step recovery program that you'll get to hear about before Al-Anon. And certainly not to say that there was not a tremendous amount of truth in those rooms, because we know that that is true. But I got to tell you, there was a truth in that room of Al-Anon about me that terrified me. So I'd drive through, pause, and drive on for quite a while. And I stopped that. I made a commitment. See, I don't think an Al-Anon is somebody who needs to go to meetings. Or an Al-Anon is not somebody who needs to read the literature and have a sponsor and work. An Al-Anon is somebody who does those things. And so in May of 1986, I jumped in with both feet, and I got a sponsor that I lovingly call a black belt Al-Anon. Step Nazi comes to mind. And my life began to change in ways that I hope we have time to tell you. You know, by the way, I am a college professor, so don't think you're going to get out on time. Tell you what, I hope you ate a good breakfast. So what was the deal? You know, I want you to know that. How do you know you're Al-Anon? You know, you've heard, maybe some of you have heard, I thought, I recognized one day that I was seeing myself do the Al-Anon handshake. You know, I was seeing me do it. I'd grown up with it, but I was seeing me doing it. And I said I wasn't going to do it, and I did it. Everybody in this room can identify with that. But I wasn't going to do fill in the blank, and I did it. Then I began to realize that it was true. If I were to drown, someone else's life would flash before me. I was so consumed with you and not me. I was consumed. I thought I was quite competent, and I found out I was quite arrogant. I thought that I had the world by the tail, and what I realized is that I was terrified. I began to realize those things and recognize them in my life. And I was in recovery, remember, you'll hear about that. And all of a sudden, there was no place else to look. There was no place to hide. And I had to come face to face with those things. And boy, I'm grateful for that today. I'm grateful that I recognize, and something I guess has come true to my heart is I stopped asking another 12-step recovery program to do that which Al-Anon is committed to doing. I kept wanting that other program to fix those areas of my life. That Al-Anon is committed to recognizing, uncovering, discarding, and so I'm grateful for that. So that happened. Okay, if it's for me, tell them I'm busy. Anyway, so what happened? I was born in Pasadena, Texas. Not my fault. If you lived down there, you'd know what I was talking about. Certainly wasn't my fault. But I was born there at a time when I know now, I didn't know it then, I would have asked, when things were tense in the Burkhalter home. Now, that's what we called it. You know, we didn't call it alcoholism. We didn't know it was alcoholism. It was tense. What that means is that my father was problem-solving. He couldn't drink at home, so he stopped coming home. And my mother was busy. If you grew up in alcoholism, you know about that dynamic. Somebody is always gone, and we got to find them, and somebody is always busy at home making it look like everything's fine. And that's when I was born. I was born into alcoholism. Probably don't have to explain it a lot, but my story, it helps me make some sense of some things when I put it together like this. As I said, my father was allowed to go to work every day and make good money and bring it home and provide for us anything that we wanted, right? But what he was not allowed to do was drink at home. Why? Because drinking's bad. Everybody knows that. Drinking's bad, and so people who drink are bad, and they should be punished. I learned that very early on. Got to punish them. And so my dad was a great problem solver. He just stopped coming home. So he was late a lot. Okay, and then so what would happen, my mother, as though that never happened, my mother would cook dinner at the same time every day. She would come home from work, and she would cook dinner. You know why? Because it's dinner time, and we're a family, and we're going to eat dinner. You know, don't be mistaken. You know, I'm surprised we didn't put signs out front for the neighbors to go. They're in there eating dinner because they're a family. I don't know. So, but my dad would forget, you know, and he'd be at the bar and he'd forget to come home at dinner time and my mother's cooking. And again, I have to keep saying this. It's like it happened yesterday. Why is she thinking it's going to be different today? It's called alcoholism. So, my mom would get on the phone list. A lot of people have by their phones things like emergency doctor numbers, the vet number, you know, those kinds of things. Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? No, at our house it was Joe's, the bloody bucket, you know, all the places where my father was not going to be when she called. So day in, day out. This is what I'm learning about relationships. So my mother would get on the phone. Is Ray there? No. Okay. Is Ray there? No. Is Ray? I started to say, why don't we just say no before you dial it? But I would have said that today. I was had a little trouble with sarcasm. But anyway, so she would call all the places where he wasn't. But she was committed. She was committed. Because it's almost dinner time and we're going to sit down and eat. So then my mother would put the children in the car. You know, you don't ever leave children out of alcoholism, do we? It's not very funny. We can laugh at it today, thank God, because we have a solution. But we don't ever leave the children out of alcoholism, do we? So you put those children in the car and you take them. And now we're going to go where he isn't. It's a great dynamic to learn about relationships. But we're trackers. We're trackers. And I tell you, so my mother would go to, you know, Joe's and the Bloody Bucket and everything. And my dad, I love this part about my dad. He always thought if you parked the truck in the back, it was invisible, you know? Hey, don't kid yourself. Some people in this room think that, don't you? Uh-huh. Yeah, just park it somewhere where it wasn't yesterday and it becomes invisible. So she learned us to come in the back way. And so we'd spot his truck and then, send the children in. Send the children in. And I remember when it would be my turn and I would go in and I'd say, Daddy, Mother really wants you to come home. It's dinner time. And, oh, what I know today is he was humiliated. And he'd say, you know, you need to tell your mama going home. And I'd go tell him that to my mother. And that was not an acceptable answer. Never was. And she never said, should have thought of that. Why didn't we just stay home? We can laugh today. You know, that makes sense to us today. But it didn't make sense when you're living in alcoholism. And there is no solution. See, we didn't know that that's what the disease was alive and well in home. We couldn't have any idea of that. What we knew was it was scary and confusing and intense. So I'd go back out and I'd say, Mom, I don't believe he's ready to come home, but he wants us to go on home. And she'd say, you go back in there and tell him to come on. So I'd go back in. You know, it took me long, long, long into the program and a lot of inventory to realize how humiliating that must have been to my father. But see, we have to punish him. We have to punish him because he drinks. And drinking is bad. And if you drink, you're pathetic and you need to be punished. Boy, I'm learning it. I've got it. I'm learning it. And so my dad would be embarrassed, of course, and he'd shovel us into the car, and I don't know how many times I probably got in the truck with him to ride home. See, we never thought about that part, that possibly it wasn't safe to put your children in the car with somebody who'd been drinking, because the whole plan was we've got to get home, get to dinner, so that we can be normal. Everything can be back in order. So we get to dinner. Well, I was always the one that made a mistake, and that would be, I would say, Daddy, don't you talk to him. I'd try to talk to him, and she'd go, what are you doing? Don't speak to him. And I'd go, okay, let me get it. We don't know where he is, so we go find him. We go get him. We bring him home so we can not talk to him. Oh, okay. Well, I'm telling you, it's hard to believe that I even ever needed Al-Anon. I'm learning so much about relationships, you know? It would have never dawned on me that he would never know how angry we are at him if we spoke to him. If we'd left him at the bar, he would never have an idea how horrible he was, how pathetic we thought him to be. Saddens my heart today. But the good news is that I found you, and I got the blessing. You're going to get to hear a lot about the blessing. I'm not going to get through this boring part. So that's what I learned about relationships. This is what it's like living in that disease that we don't know how to identify. We don't know what to call it. We don't know anything. What we know is that everybody's surviving the best way we can. Boy, I tell you, I thought I was the most popular kid in school. I joined everything, any and everything. Why? Because I didn't want to go home. I didn't know who was home. You could know who was home and not know who was home, you know? Couldn't bring friends there. Are you kidding me? Never knew who was home. So I tell you, I was a member of everything. And because I was learning absolutely no skills, everything I learned in a home of alcoholism, notice I say a home of alcoholism, my parents did the best they could do. They didn't wake up every morning going, let's see what we can do today to really confuse her. You know? We're all self-centered. They're wondering what they're going to do today to survive. That's what's going on. And so I just thought, man, if we can just all get through, if we can all just exist and get through. I began to develop a hatred for my family that is indescribable. Not proud of that today, but I really began. I thought, how pathetic. How pathetic. And I began to develop an arrogance. An arrogance beyond description. Because what I decided was that I was always going to have to be a little bit better than you. A little richer, a little taller. I'm much taller than I look, for example. Okay? I had to believe that. I had to believe that to stay in the same room with you. Now I have to just take a deal from the AA literature. The truth is that, you know, that egomaniac with an inferiority complex describes us exactly. Because I got to tell you, my experiences, and again, it's my story, I get to tell it, you don't get to talk, is that addiction is addiction is addiction. And I've proven that. I'm afraid that before long I'll find out I'm addicted to carpet or something. I mean, if it's in the room with me long enough, I'm addicted to it. Okay? But the good news is there's a solution. So you think about that. I really got it. So I'm joining things. I'm not going home. The confusion. When I went to college, I thought, you know what? I will never need another human being. I'm going to college. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to be famous. I'll never need anybody. And let me tell you something. You can do it. You can pull it off. I hated those people. He was so pathetic. So I've already decided that I'm much smarter. That I must be adopted. I started saying things. Well, you know, I'm only kin to my dad by marriage. Gosh, I was so embarrassed by this family. I never included them in anything in my life. I never told them anything I was doing at school or whatever. And then I whined to you for years and years and years about how my family didn't care. And I never included them in my life. I was too busy judging and putting down and creating a world for me that made me believe I was superior. And I operated for years and years and years. I cultivated my arrogance and my hatred. Do you realize that when I did my inventory work and I started working the steps of this program, I felt like I had spare time when I stopped hating my family. It sort of became like another job, you know, and I was able to retire. Boy, what freedom that has. What a freedom that has. But I'm telling you, and so I go to college, I'm going to be rich and famous, and then I majored in education. Boy, I'm smart. And I'm not going to need another human being. And guess what? You can do it. You can pull it off. You can close your heart, friends. You can just close it down and go, I'm needing nothing or nobody. And I did that. I dated through the years. I loved, I sort of knew that I wanted to go with the cheerleader. I sort of knew that. Now, if I told you I knew it, I'd be lying because I had no self-awareness. And you know what? If you live from your shoulders up, don't think for a minute you're going to really have any awareness. I would be lying. But I sort of knew because I always liked helping them dress for the games. But, I forgot that was on tape. Okay. No. Okay. But I was able to go out with the football players, and because we could talk football, and boy, I really did love letting them take me to the homecoming and buying the flowers and going out to dinner, and I loved that, and going. But then they wanted to do other things. They didn't think by date 6, 7, 12, 14 that it was unreasonable to hold hands. And I didn't want to hold hands. I didn't want them to touch me because, see, I had made a commitment. I was going to keep it. Why on earth would I ever let another human being be close to me? I didn't want to go find them. I didn't want to, you know, call and track them down. I didn't want to cook. Oh, bring them home. That's the only thing relationships meant to me. I didn't want to have to punish them if they drank. And I've learned well that you should be punished when you drink. So I got to tell you, I go to college. I was an athlete. I did relatively well in school. I used to say I did exceptionally well until one day I had to look at one of my transcripts, and I found out that I was an average student. But I'd always told you I was an exceptional student because I'm really smart, remember? I'm really smart. Don't forget. Remember I told you I'm the smartest person I knew. It was a challenge to be around some of you. So I'm on, and I got to believe that. Can you picture this, you know, where you're just laying down on the ground, you know, about, you dig a hole and you're just laying down. And I had to believe that I was better just to be equal to the ground. That's what alcoholism does. It produces those kind of attitudes. And you know what else it does? Every single thing that I've learned keeps me separate from you. I was separating myself from my family, friends. Why did I think I had to join this group? And then when you got to know me, you might find out those secrets. So I went to this group and then that group and then that group. I was terrified that you'd know who I was. My parents divorced my sophomore year in college. I wanted to throw a party. I hated my dad, and then I hated my mom because it just seemed like equal opportunity. It didn't seem fair not to hate my mother. I mean, I can remember thinking that, you know, because I guess I hated him because she liked him. She loved him. I had no concept of what love might be about. And she wanted him to be there, and they divorced. And then my father remarried, and then they divorced, and then my parents remarried. Gosh, are you feeling kind of sorry for me? Yeah. Boy, my senior year in high school, I have to stand up at my parents' wedding and wear a dress. Whew. You know, it's like, it's a wonder I'm a success today. But the truth is that nobody asked me, and I'm grateful. Nobody asked me. It's none of my business, was it? It was none of my business. So I went to college, and I become an athlete, and I'm doing pretty well. And I got to tell you, then I became the tracker. Oh, I'm the tracker. All of a sudden, you know, a lot of people think, well, it's college, right? And you drink and you party and everything. So good thing I was there, you know, to protect all these people. Can you just be glad you weren't there, okay? Let me just give you a quick description. My friends would say, well, it was a dry county, so we'd have to drive a good little ways, and we were going to go to the bar and play pool, or we were going to go to a party or whatever. And I would begin to rehearse them in the car. Okay. Attention, sluts. That's what they became. I tried everything I could to prevent it. But I'd say, how many drinks are you going to have? Now, I didn't drink still because drinking is, and alcoholics or drunk should be. Thank you. Good teacher. Okay. God, because that will be on your final. So I'm not drinking, but I am in charge. I made myself the designated everything. I was the designated driver. I was the designated decider. I was the designated get you home. And I became that. And you know what? They never listened. We would go someplace and they'd drink, pass out in the corner, sluts. And I would get them back in the car, and I'd drive everybody home, and I'd help them halfway up the stairs. Oh, think about that for just a second. You help them halfway, and then you let go. Kaboom, 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 kaboom. Bruises the next day. Hey, I was helping. I was teaching. They're drinking. That's bad. I have to punish. I had to. I could laugh about it today. Or I would do just one other thing. Sometimes I was kind enough to get them all the way into the room. And in dorm rooms. Now, I'm old, and you used to have these little cute dorm rooms with a bed, like a little single bed, and then a table, if you're lucky. And I would prop them up on the table, and I'd say, now, just stay right there, to an alcoholic, right? Stay right there. So, and I'd say, I'm going to go get your gown or your pajamas or whatever, knowing that as soon as I turned around, they're going to fall off the table. clunk. And I can remember this one person whose name will remain nameless would say, you know, if you're going to help us, why don't you really, you know, the stairs or the, there's a bed within, you know, 17 inches of the table. Why don't you just put us on the bed? And do you realize that I would look them in the eye and with every ounce of sincerity say, because you would not learn. Because you would not learn. And I was serious. I'm trying to save you from becoming a pathetic person who will not succeed. And I believe that. I believed it with all my heart, that I was saving the world from alcoholism. See, I believed that if we could take all the alcohol away, we wouldn't have ism. I believed that until I got to you, until you taught me that alcohol is but a symptom, whether it goes in my body or whether it goes in your body. It's just a symptom, that's all. And I lived that way, in and out. Now, but what about my parents? Because, it's like I didn't have to take a course on hating your parents. I was very willing to do that in my spare time. But I always went home on significant holidays. I think I thought it was a law in Texas. When I met people in the program that came in that say, well, you know, I just couldn't go to my home for a couple of years. And I thought, how do you do that? I really didn't know that was a possibility. So I did the next best thing. I can remember driving for hours, working up my rage. Not even realize, just working it up. And I'd walk in. Hello. You know? Happy Thanksgiving. Thinking that I am such a good person. I'm a daughter who always goes home for Thanksgiving. I'm someone who's always there at Christmas. And I don't cook for people I love, so I get there just in time to eat. Okay? But I participate. I've been believing that with all my heart, that I didn't miss holidays so that I was a good member of my family. I believe that. And I could stay just long enough till the confusion got just a little bit too much. You know, when my father would be barbecuing his elbow. You know? Whatever, because he was so drunk, and I'd get angry, and I'd say something that I wouldn't repeat from behind this podium today to him, because I never treated him with an ounce of respect, not an ounce. I was smarter, remember? God, I'm smarter, and I'm better, and I'm going to be a success, and I don't need these people. But you know what? I never forgot to do two things. At Christmas time, I never walked away from the carload of gifts that I was putting into my car. And I never refused one time to put their money in my bank. See, I got to remember that. It came out very clearly in an inventory. Very clearly that I never minded taking things from them. After all, they owe it to me. It's a miracle I'm alive and well today with all I had to put up with while I was growing up. That was the attitude I carried and I carried and I carried. I need to tell you that right after I graduated from college and am going to graduate school, I did something that I thought I would never do. Some friends, those sluts, came to visit me, and they said, you know, I was so lonely. I was so lonely, and because you know you're in the college environment, and I moved to Houston to become rich and famous. Remember, and I'm teaching school, and I'm now needing to believe that you're going to move so that your children can be educated by me, and these kinds of ideas, and I've got to just feel like I'm just a little bit better, and that I'm just going to be the educator of the year kind of thing. And the sluts came and asked me if they could stay for the weekend and we could party. And all of a sudden I said, I think that's a good idea. And I drank. I drank. I wish I could tell you I drank that one time, but the truth is that I crossed over and I became an alcoholic. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. But of course it's an important part of my story. That I gave an alcoholic alcohol. Now, that's just my experience. I was so alcoholic. But I now have fed the alcoholic alcohol. And I went running. But what I need you to hear, because I am a double winner, I do have the addiction to people, places, and things as well as alcohol. I need you to hear that I'd have done anything so that they wouldn't leave. I began to compromise myself right then. I'd have done anything. Just don't leave. I was lonely and whatever they wanted. Do you want a drink? And I remember saying, perhaps I was harsh, you know, about their drinking. And I think I'm lucky to be alive, you know. So here we go. Now we're on a new trail. Boy, I fed the alcoholic alcohol. But anyway, then I decide I get a phone call to go to graduate school. Of course I do. Of course I get a call to go to graduate school. I'm smart. I'm really smart. So I go to Michigan, where I cause a couple of wrecks and some other interesting things. I'd never seen snow. I caused one wreck just because I was going. And I was trying to catch a snowflake so I could see what it looked like. And this guy, right before calling the police, looked at me. I said, "Is this snow?" And he went, "Yeah." And as that was happening, a guy ran into somebody else in his car. I mean, they kind of had a little wreck. But and actually, I did kind of slide into the back of a bus also. But anyway, I had trouble being focused at this time. But I'm in graduate school, of course. I'm going to get another degree. I mean, it makes you smarter, right? It makes you much smarter. I needed to prove that I was smarter, and I know that I'm already the smartest person I know, so I can go to Michigan and share this wealth of knowledge that I have. And I don't know, you got pads in your packets, right? Because you might want to write this part down. I got my master's degree in 9 months. Ooh. For the tape. Okay. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I made a 4-point. I keep waiting for somebody to walk up to me at the mall, you know, somewhere, and go, "Could it be you? Could it be that person who went to graduate school in Michigan and got their master's degree in 9 months and made a 4-point? What am I saying? See, that's what I brought to you. I'm describing the person I brought to you. I needed to believe that just so that you and I could sit across the table and visit. I needed to believe that I was just that incredibly special person. Boy, I needed it badly. Because everything I learned in alcoholism kept me separate from you. Everything. So now I'm much even smarter than I was when I went to Michigan. I came home and I'm going to set the world on fire. My alcoholism went crazy. Need to say that. And then I got sober. But why am I talking about that? Because I'd like to say, since this is an Al-Anon talk, that because I got sober, I stopped stalking, holding hostages, and those kinds of things. I'd like to say that I learned how to become a better employee and a better daughter. I'd like to say that all of a sudden, because I did not drink, I was a better partner in a relationship. That's not my experience. I'm not saying that alcoholics cannot get those things in AA. I don't know. That's not my mind to say. What I'm saying is that I didn't and I couldn't. If I could have changed my behavior around people and places and things, I would have. I would have, but I could not. And I continued to be in situations where I could not function. I could not. I was not participating in my family unless it meant I got something back. I only took those checks and those gifts. I could retire today if I had the money it took to from moving. I'd work in one school district, and they wouldn't do it right. And I'd try to help them. Don't get me wrong. I would try to help them, and they wouldn't do it. And so I'd move to this city and this city and this city. And I always think, well, it's just a better job situation. I could retire and for all the money I spent searching. You know what happened? I know you can identify with this. If you have an addiction, I would move to another city. It had become time to lock the door at night, and I still didn't like who was inside. I didn't like her in Pasadena or Huntsville or Kalamazoo, Michigan. I didn't like her in Houston. What made me think I was going to like her in Waco or Austin? I'm not even having to make any up. And if you've ever been to Texas, if you go to Waco, you know you're sick. Okay? So this is me. I'm moving around looking for somebody I'm going to like. And I'm not leaving out all the sex and the good stuff. Remember, there's not going to be another human being in my life. And I was able to do that. I was able to I love that word, drive-by, a little drive-by dating. But I was not about to let you touch me because I wasn't going to let another human being get close to me. And I did it. And I did it well. But, I'm really smart, and I'm teaching, and I'm doing all this stuff, and about 5 years into my sobriety, I have what I would call that proverbial gun to my head. I'm a sissy. If I ever say I'm going to kill myself, trust me, it is a drama. Okay. Okay. But the truth is that I... okay, I asked God. Trust me, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. I'm always surprised, obviously, about the cheerleader thing. But anyway, but I have to tell you, this is coming up, so I'm supposed to say it. One morning, one night, I was going to bed. Boy, I hadn't thought about this in a million years. And I set up my alarm. I realized that I had set my alarm. But I got on my knees and I very, very, very earnestly asked God to help me come home. That please, I do not want to wake up. I don't have that kind of courage. So I'm asking God to be the instrument here. I'm a sick puppy, okay? I'm asking God to take me home. Please, I don't want to do it. Now, I don't know why I set my alarm, okay? I prayed and I set my alarm. Okay, I don't know. The reason I remember that is because my alarm went off and it made me so furious that I realized I was alive because I was hearing my alarm. Now, today, just my alarm on itself makes me furious. But I was furious, serious as I can be, that I realized I was alive. That God wouldn't do that for me. I couldn't do it for myself. But I wanted to. But I want you to know, I set the snooze. I set the snooze and gave him another shot. True story. True story. I said, you don't understand. I can't live here anymore. Have you ever felt that in your heart and your mind? I can't live here anymore. I can't go to that job. I can't go home. I can't have another 6 months of relationship. I can't do it. I'm so grateful for that day. Because the truth was, is I couldn't. I just fought. Have you ever heard this? Truth and me got in the same room. Well, I avoided that at all cost. Truth and me got in the same. For the first time, I knew I can't do it anymore. And I asked God, I said, you know what? You better have a really good idea. Because I don't want to do it. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be smarter. I don't want to be better. I don't want to be richer. I just don't want to be here anymore. And a person that I'll never forget, 12-stepped me into the Al-Anon family group. And like I said, I'd kind of driven by a couple of times and because my family stuff, if you're sober, I can promise you, you know, life changes. If you're new here, by the way, he asked who was new here. You know, there's only one word in what you have to change, and it's called everything. Okay? But the good news is they don't leave you hanging. They tell you how. Did anybody ever tell you how before? Now, I don't know what to do because I don't know how to live in this life. But I don't have a clue that you're going to send me somewhere where you can give me a design for living that works every day for the rest of your life. So I'm just at wit's end. And somebody 12-stepped me and they told me, you know what? There's a solution. There's a solution. And you're asking Alcoholics Anonymous to do that which Al-Anon is committed to doing. That's just my experience. So I began to go to, I got an Al-Anon sponsor. I got to tell you. Both of my sponsors have always been, we don't get thinking time. She knows that thinking time is not only hazardous to me, but it's hazardous to those who live around me. So I didn't get a lot of thinking time from the absolute get-go. I want to tell you, she said, you know, we're going to begin to work the steps. And I said, well, okay, I'm ready for that. But what I was saying is, I've really kind of already done that. This is what I'm thinking. Now, I was smart enough that one day not to say it out loud. But I'm thinking that. Why am I thinking that? Because I got to tell you, from the first meeting I ever attended, ever, I was listening with this ear, memorizing with these two eyes, in case you ask questions, truth. You know, my whole experience is around education. I believe that I had to do that just to be okay. Just to be okay. I had to keep getting more education. So I'm like, okay. They ask, you know, if they refer to a step. Oh, that step? And I could say it. I'm memorizing. I am editing. I'm an English major. Of course, I've edited any of the literature. You know, there are a lot of stuff. There are some errors in the way. things are said, or actually they're just better ways to say them. And I had to do that. I don't regret that past nor wish to shut the door on it today, because no one said, you know what, if you're going to do that, why don't you go on? Why don't you go on? I brought this sick puppy that I've described to you to meetings of Al-Anon, and they said, keep coming back. Keep coming back. It gets better. No matter what. And I guess what I was going to say is, of course my family, town to town to town, and I kept locking a door and having to go in and be with somebody I didn't want to be with. But yet when I unlocked the door and walked out, remember, what did I have to do? I had to act like I thought she was phenomenal. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. And now you're telling me that if I get a sponsor and work the steps, a design for a living that I did not create, I could become anybody I wanted to be. Still true. Boy, I'm not even sort of finished. And I like who locks the door at my house at night. I like her. I can look in the mirror and say, who, you old gray fox? Who? Yeah, I like her. And you know, one of the reasons I like her so much today, I love her, but I like her. It's easier to love her than it is to like her because of God. God is so my partner that loving me became easier than liking me. That's just my experience. And I can look in there and go, boy, you know what? The thing, one of the things I really like the most, mirror on the wall, is that I don't ever want to get so smart I stop coming here. I don't want to ever think for a minute that the job I'm doing right now is any more important than who set up these chairs or who made the coffee. You're real glad I didn't make the coffee. I'm so grateful for that. I'm becoming that person I always wanted to be. And I'll keep getting to do that because there's not a chance in the world I'll be the same after this meeting and after this weekend. I won't be the same because I'll have some of you in my heart now and in my mind. And then I was promised that if I would study the literature, it wasn't suggested that I read the literature. It was suggested that I study the literature. And that if I would do that, that any problem I had or created, there was a solution in the literature. 15 years later, still true, still true, still true. But the answers are in that literature, and they speak to me in a way that nothing else could, because they speak to me in big book meetings. I'm a big book Al-Anon. They speak to me in 12 and 12 meetings, whether it is AA or Al-Anon. And the literature speaks to me through you in a way that gives me a solution for any problem I have. See, before I thought, if there really was a God, I could just stay at home and pray, and maybe a billboard was going to appear, what, on my fireplace? The guy was going to knock on the door and say, someone's going to knock on the door and say, hi, God sent me. This is really going to work. I don't know what I thought. But see, you're telling me that the answers are in the literature through working the steps, going to meetings, meeting people that felt like I did on the inside. You know what? I was also promised that God would absolutely always be big enough. Now, that's a tall order. What an order. That's a tall order. God would always be big enough. And I tell you what, I'm going to get to share a little bit with some things about some things that I got proven early and within the last 8 months that no matter what, I have experienced some things that absolutely were the most devastating that I thought a human being could experience. And God's been big enough. On the days that I forget, my sponsor remembers. I was promised that. And I was promised that if I would give back just a little bit, and that's about what I give back, just a little bit of what you so freely gave to me, I would get tenfold, tenfold, tenfold. Continues to be true. By Thursday night, midnight, my heart went up. My heart was so high just being here with you and the experience that I had within hours of being among this fellowship. See, that's what I was promised. Because what happened to me, remember, is that I couldn't do it anymore. And the way it is now, think about that. Because I go to meetings, because I study the literature, because I work with a sponsor and I do work the steps without the yeah buts. You know, I've taken the yeah buts out of my vocabulary. I began to go, you know, instead of saying, well, are you absolutely sure that an inventory would be appropriate at this time? I've said, when do you need me to be done? Boy, I'm not breaking my arm, patting myself on the back. You know why? Because it's all your fault. I literally have felt the freedom. I've walked across the bridge that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 have built. So how could I not want to do that? Boy, that would have never been my idea. That would have never been my idea. I want to really quickly talk to you about the steps, because in my opinion, that's the thing that has changed my life the most. Working the steps. Because remember, in my for me, the fact that I can be a good employee today and a good partner in my relationship and a good daughter and a little sister. I'm a little sister for the first time. I've always had a big brother, and he's always been a big brother, but I wasn't a little sister. I didn't know how to be. I was scared to death to recognize him as a big brother, because then I'd have to get close to him and know him. And I might accidentally love him. And if you love somebody, they go away. That's what I learned. So I did that first step. You know, I said, I'm powerless over alcohol when you put it in your body. What a concept. That I'd been competing with alcoholism my whole life. I was born into it and I competed. And I got to tell you, my friend, you're not going to win. You will not win against alcoholism. So I've been competing in that. My life was unmanageable. Trust me, it wasn't necessarily always for a better job to move from town to town to town and wait for you to do something so that I could be okay. Thank you for that. And then you told me in the second step that I could recognize behavior as being insane, because that helped me believe that there was something that could help me make good decisions. I didn't have to act insanely. I was so caught up with the semantics. I don't think I've ever been insane. I was never arrested. I never went into a hospital, for heaven's sakes. I'm smart. Boy, thank you for saying that day. Perhaps moving to Waco, to Austin, moving and is insane. But that if I could come to believe, just recognize. I was one of those people that the sponsor really did say, turn your will over to a chicken, it'd do better than you. I was so arrogant. You know, just pick something. Boy, my sponsors truly have a mansion in heaven. I had a question for everything, as you might guess. And I always wanted to know when the exam was. When am I going to get, my grade? That third step. Can you imagine what they're asking us to do? To make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. You know, I'd always wanted somebody to care about me. A very dear friend of mine who died with 36 years in this program said, the steps well worked will walk you into the arms of God. Is that the most beautiful thing? Because I got to tell you, care of God. I can't think of a place I'd rather be than to see this big old granddad. That's my vision. And I get to crawl up in that lap and feel those arms around me on those days when it doesn't make sense. And on those days that I'm so happy and I want to share it with somebody who's not here anymore, I feel those arms, that big granddad saying, see, I care about you when you don't know how to care about yourself. And so that's what boy, that's a tough order. That's what I thought at first, to turn my will and my life over to something that would love me more than I ever could and in any situation. And I got to tell you, I realized then for the first time that I was trusting my sponsor as my higher power, and I'm okay with that. It's the only thing I could trust. I had lost the ability to trust. And all of a sudden, that in the second, once I did the first step, thank God you didn't leave me there. You didn't say, oh, tough, you're kind of powerless, kid. No, you said 2 through 12 will free you up to be anybody you want to be. So you ready for this? The second and third step created a partnership with me, my sponsor, and God that could help me move through life. Remember how smart I am and how tough I think I am? Oh, I thought I was tough. There's not a chance I could have done steps 4 through 12 without doing 1, 2, 3. See, I would have been kidding myself. I needed the strength that said, if you turn your attitudes and your actions over to something bigger than you and who cares about you more than you, you will now have the courage to look at your life so that it can change. You know, all those silly things. Oh, I just used to roll my eyes when I'd hear, well, you can't fix it if you don't know it's broken. Oh, gosh, I was so, get a life. You know, I was so, all of it. I just could hardly bear to sit through a meeting. And I'm sure that I didn't show it. So it's time to do that inventory. And let me tell you, I'm gonna speed this up. 4 and 5. You know what I realized, thanks to good sponsorship? That the only thing that was happening in 4 and 5, and it seems so humongous, it's like, oh, God, I can't imagine looking back over my life and owning, taking responsibility for those behaviors. Well, so I made an analogy for me that really worked. I said, you know, if I brought my family, and if I'm just, and I'm just going to finish out my talk using just the relationship of my mom and dad. If I just were to do that, bring them in for a weekend, my brother, sister-in-law, niece, nephew, and my mom and dad. If I brought them in for a weekend, you can bet there's going to be some trash at the end of the weekend because we're going to use paper plates. I'm not going to wash dishes, huh? And all that stuff. And there really is a point to this if you stay with me. So there's paper plates. Now, I didn't eat off all the paper plates. Sometimes my dad would have eaten off the plate or whatever, and there's other trash. There's dirty clothes, there's stuff, but guess what? They're not all mine. See, in Al-Anon, I wanted to take credit. If something good was going on, I wanted credit, but if you said you had a headache, I'd say, oh, I'm sorry. That's where we live. Oh, God, it must have been something I said. You know, I'm drowning. Your life flashes before my eyes. That's where I had lived. And all of a sudden, I'm really realizing that I'm being guided to just separate the trash, to put my trash in a bag, and to recognize, okay, there's Kenneth's trash, and there's my sister-in-law's trash in here, and to divide that up and take responsibility for mine. I don't know about you, but still this day, I can take that trash and divide it up. But I can walk around it in the kitchen for longer sometimes than I want to. You know? And so I'm glad my sponsor said, now we got it. You got this trash all separated. We know what you're afraid of, and we know where you've been selfish and self-centered. So why don't we take the trash to the curb? You do it in your own home. Have you ever had the trash man knock on your door and go, this is bad trash. I'm not taking it. Sorry. This is much too much trash. Every time I come by here, I get all upset. No. They put the trash in the truck and they take it away. And God has always been faithful to do that. When I give it to God and another human being, I'm taking out the trash and God takes it. But 6 and 7, whew, are the God steps. And it's never failed that when I take action, I act as if that's true. My life is freed up. 6 and 7, those God steps. You know, all he's saying is, you know what? When you're ready and you tell me you're ready, I will be faithful. My example is, remember, I'd go with these women and I'd say, well, we're going to be together forever, right? Sign on this paper. No, I mean, you know, I wanted a contract after a while, and I was just devastated that there was time after time I'd go about 6 months in a relationship and they would forget we were going to be together forever and move on. And I would do what any respectable Al-Anon does. I would begin to stalk them. And I would drive by their house. And I'd feel badly about that, but perhaps you can understand this, because what was one of my character defects was jealousy. And nobody had ever told me that if I'd looked at the cause or what was the need for the jealousy, I could get rid of that character. In fact, no, I just kept wanting to not be jealous. So it's 11:30 midnight, and I'm pacing in my house and going, I bet there's another car in the driveway, and I can't believe this is happening to me. And I'd pace up and down. And then I had to get in the car, and I'd drive, and you know what? I would not remember how I got there. There is emotional drunkenness. And I drive by there. Now, perhaps I'm unique. But when I got there and saw the other car, I never once said, oh, good, I was right. gosh, I love being right. Of course not. I was like, oh, you know, that heartbreak and the, just the, and then I would drive to a 7-Eleven and call them so that they couldn't be doing anything if they were on the phone. But that's the kind of behavior I brought. But you know what? You made me say in my 6th and 7th sin, I'm entirely ready to not do that anymore. It's not right. I had no right to invade somebody else's privacy who had made it very clear that we were not in a relationship. And I want you to know that I can remember the very first night I had to pace up and down, up and down, up and down. And I didn't get in the car. And I didn't get in the car. And I didn't get in the car. And I can look any one of you in the eye today and say, I cannot remember. I live with a woman today that is the absolute love of my life. That's important for a lot of reasons. But it's important for you to know that I can't even remember when I have felt jealous. See, it's impossible that when she, I think when she walks into the room, you should all be staring at her. She gets more beautiful every time she breathes. Do you see that? Well, of course you're going to look at her. What a freedom you gave me. What a freedom. And you know what? And again, I can't pat myself. God was faithful. He took the, put it in the truck, and he drove on. Because I stopped getting in the car. I acted as if that 6 and 7 were done. Can you believe that? What a miracle. It goes on and on and on. In 8 and 9, I took responsibility. I said, I was wrong. I stopped saying I was sorry I did that my whole life. That's the easy one. Look somebody in the eye and say, I was wrong. And this is how I'm going to amend that behavior. And I have to tell you very quickly how I did that with my dad and my mom. My dad got very ill. I got very scared. I wanted to get spiritual. I got scared. My Al-Anon sponsor said, go do this. I went to do it. My Al-Anon sponsor said, go do this. I did it. Things like, nope, make no sense. I didn't really like him. I was just being nicer. And I walk in the hospital room and I touch him. Might be easy for you. I grabbed his foot. I could have not gone over and touched him on the shoulder for a second. But I grabbed his foot. But I want you to know, I wanted to check it off. Did it. The next day, she wanted me to touch him and tell him I loved him. Where do they get this stuff? You know, that's what I'm thinking. I walked in that hospital room, and I looked at him, and I put my arm on his shoulder. And I said, Dad, I love you, and I'm going to lunch with Natalie, and she's going to pick me up in about 5 minutes downstairs. And so I'm going to go, but I'll be right back. Is there anything I can bring you? It's the best I could do. Remember how smart I am? Hear it, please. That's the best I could do, but I got in, I love. And day after day, then it got easier to put my hand on his shoulder and say, I love you, Daddy. And he taught me to tell him the truth when it wasn't the easiest. When I knew he was going to die, I didn't say, oh, no, you're not going to die. And I didn't crack a joke. Now, that's hard. I said, Dad, I think you're right. Can you imagine you're giving me that much dignity? If I could thank you every single day just for that. But guess what happened? Because I got to hurry. Then my dad died. Remember me? I'm the one. What am I going to get? Couldn't believe it. Man, we're getting together and now we've gotten the blessing and we fell in love and I'm treating him with respect. I treated you with respect and you were new, but I didn't know how to treat him with respect. And I'm doing it. My dad died. Because see, don't think of it as a bargain. That's what I did for you. Well, how could you do this? But you know what you gave me? So 12 years later now, it's 12 years later, and I get that phone call from my mother, my sweet mother. Because see, now I have to start treating her with respect. And loving her, and telling her I love her, and touching her, didn't make much sense. And I tell you, if you got a good sponsor, do it once. They're going to make you do it again. Okay? So every day, from that day when my father died, I had to do that with my mother. And on mid-May, this last year, my mother called and said, I can't be alone anymore. And you said that, Sherilyn, and you said that you could take me into your home if I ever needed to. Were you serious? I wouldn't gotten that phone call 15 years ago. My arrogance would have had me miss that. I wouldn't have been the one she called. We'd had many emergencies that I'm not going to go into. But I bought a home, and we brought my mother to live with me. She became one of our best friends. How did that happen? Remember, you don't get from here to there. I hated her every existence until I met you. And every single day, I made breakfast with her instructions. I don't know how to cook. I I bathed her. Don't miss that opportunity to brush someone's hair. I didn't know how. Well, one amends that I'll treasure the rest of my life is that on Thursday, I couldn't have known that she was going to pass the next Tuesday. But I had to AA Al-Anon commitment to take me out of town. It was our first trial where someone was going to stay with her all weekend. And on that Thursday, I said, "Mom, would you like for me to paint your fingernails?" "I sure hope not." I mean, I can't paint my fingernails, and out of my mouth is coming, "Would you like for me to paint your fingernails?" And she said, "That would feel so nice." And I took my little mother's hand, and she's shaking, and I'm shaking. And I'm picking a sort of a neutral color so that if I missed... See, I'd never thought she'd say yes. But I was glad I was willing to ask. One of the things that my mother was very embarrassed by was her hands. Because of the medication, her hands had turned a really strange color. So when she went home for Thanksgiving, my dad died on Christmas Day and my mother went home for Thanksgiving. And I got to that service and I walked up to see her for the first time. Having passed over, I could look at her precious hands and see that fingernail polish. Might seem silly to you, but I realized that I'd come full circle in a relationship that I had kept separate with my arrogance and with my intelligence and all the things that I thought I had that I didn't believe she had. And what you helped me do is to be of maximum service to another human being. And I did not caretake her. I was her caregiver. One day at a time, I went to meetings and I asked questions. And I said, "What do I do now?" So when I walk into my office at Texas Women's University, or I walk into the classroom where I get the honor of teaching people who are going to be teachers, I don't know it all. Saying I don't know is really easy today. Because that doesn't keep me separate. It keeps me a part of. Those amends changed my life. So why wouldn't I want to be involved in 10, 11, and 12? See, to me, it's like taking a photograph now. I did that work so that I could be free. And all of a sudden, you're just saying in 10th step, take a picture every day, Nance. Take a Polaroid. Did you like it, or was it a little fuzzy today? Did you need to say that? That's all right. It doesn't say, if ever we're wrong again, we promptly admit it. It says, when we're wrong. They already knew it. What a relief. What a relief. And so every day I take a picture. And I don't even have to do all this by myself. Because remember that 3, 7, 11. Now that 11th step says, you know what? If you really want to do this thing right, why don't you just check in the morning? There is literature that tells you exactly what to do. Why don't you just do what you're told, invite God in, say you've probably got a much better idea, and then volunteer to be on that committee. I know about those committees in the morning that wake up before you do and you start to get up and they go, "Stay in bed, it's going to be really bad." Of course I know about those committees. But you know what? You get up and you participate and all of a sudden you're realizing, wait a minute, the God of my understanding is the chairman of this committee. And if I volunteer to be on that committee every day instead of, you know, out of bed, shower, I used to think meditation was turning off the radio on the way to work. What a miracle. And that 12 step, I'm grateful today that I have been in groups when nobody else was there to clean the tables. I'm grateful for that. I didn't think of it. I wish I could take credit for it. No, my sponsor took me to places where we cleaned. I'm glad that 12-step work is going to a meeting and saying, this is how long you've been there, so that that newcomer has hope. I'm grateful that there's all kinds of ways to carry the message, and so I can be reminded not to carry the person. I am so grateful today that I believe with all my heart that I know how to be among you. I don't have to be separate from you to be okay. And for those things, I am grateful. I believe today, I can close by saying that I never thought it would get this good. It's better than it's ever been. And the best is yet to come. Thanks.
Oh, yes, we are colorful.